This is Jim Inkster coming today on the show. We'll talk with Capital Watcher C.B. Fergotson, the former chief counsel for the House Appropriations Committee and frequent blogger about Louisiana politics. We'll look at 2013, in which Vance McAllister pulled an upset over Neil Reiser and won in the 5th Congressional District with the support of Phil Robertson of Duck Dynasty. Also, 2014 brings us the fourth election quest for the U.S. Senate of Mary Landrieu. She is being opposed most prominently by Congressman Bill Cassidy of Baton Rouge. We'll get CB's take on that. We'll also hear from him about Governor Bobby Jindal and the year ahead. Governor Jindal will speak before the Baton Rouge Press Club next week, perhaps as a foray to his presidential quest in 2016. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number outside the area. It is 877-217-5757. You may reach us by email, inkstershow@wrkf.org. We're going to be joined in just a moment by C.B. Fergotson, the well-known blogger and political pundit. But do want to note that LSU closed its season yesterday in Tampa in the Outback Bowl with a victory, 21-14 over Iowa. Les Miles finishes 10-3, fourth consecutive year of 10 wins for the Tigers, first time that's happened. And the Tigers move on to 2014 with an easy schedule other than Alabama, but the Crimson Tide will play at Tiger Stadium, and then we'll see how it goes for Les Miles in year number 10. He's first coach to last 10 years at LSU since Charles McClendon. Good morning, C.B. Fergotson.
Good morning, Jim. Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you. And you remember some days at LSU when Charlie McClendon was coach, I'm sure.
I was there, and that's the reason I defend Les Miles against those that want to get rid of him because he can't beat Alabama. It took us decades to get back to the winning ways of Charlie McClendon. In fact, it wasn't until Nick Saban that we got back to those ways.
That's true. Charlie McClendon was a successful coach who won 70% of his games at LSU, but he was 2-14 against Alabama. And in that one 10-year period, which included 8 years of McClendon and 2 years of Jerry Lane Stovall, LSU lost 10 years in a row from 71 to 81. Actually, that was 11 seasons, 11 years in a row. So it was 9 years of McClendon and 2 years of Stovall. But in those 11 years, CB, Alabama went 69-4 in the Southeastern Conference. So not many people were beating the Crimson Tide.
That's right. I mean, we weren't the only.
Paul Bear Bryant.
Yeah, we weren't the only team that couldn't beat them. That was, you know, when you look back on it, you wonder how that happened. But you had to be there at the time, and I was. And you know, there was just a furor over not being able to beat Alabama. It was short-sighted.
Well, the Crimson Tide faithful are in abundance in New Orleans right now as Alabama plays Oklahoma tonight in the Sugar Bowl, and Nick Saban has, decided to stay at Alabama for the duration of his career, much to the chagrin of many LSU worshipers who wanted him to go to Texas and get the heck out of the SEC, but doesn't look like that's going to happen.
Hey, Jim, do you think there's any chance that he's just playing along? I mean, you know, football contracts, like most contracts, don't mean anything. They can be broken. It's just a matter of paying the price. Texas really hasn't selected a coach yet. And so I'm just wondering if this is about just waiting until the Sugar Bowl is over.
You never know with Nick Saban.
Yep.
And I spoke a few days ago with Lod Cook. That's the same guy who has all the buildings at LSU named in his honor, and he thinks the same thing.
Is that right?
Yeah, he says, don't count Texas out with Nick Saban. He says they have more money than God, and Saban probably knows that it's going to be tough to replicate the success of the last several years at Alabama, so he might take the money and run off to Austin, which isn't a bad place to live, C.B. Fergotson.
No, it's not. I've spent some time there, and it's certainly, if you are the head football coach at the University of Texas, you are more important than the governor of the state, the mayor of Austin, or any other public official. I mean, you are right up there. You have your own little kingdom.
And Austin has something that I would surmise that Tuscaloosa does not. It has a nude beach.
Yeah. So that's true.
Nick Saban might find some new venues to pursue, yeah, like Lake Travis, if he were to exactly move off to Austin, Texas. And he is a man who's had success everywhere he's been, principally at LSU. I say that. He really didn't have much success with the Miami Dolphins. He's had success at the college level and won national championships at LSU and Alabama, four of them total. So no doubt is considered the best coach in the United States, and the LSU fans, I'm sure, would be gleeful if he headed off to Austin. But as much as the LSU fans have castigated Saban and burning him in effigy and all this stuff, if somehow, let's say Les Miles went to Austin, that Texas got an interest in Miles and his daughter goes to school there and he decided, hey, I'm going to take the Texas job, and then Saban suddenly came back to LSU, they would welcome him with unbelievable enthusiasm. It would be a love fest beyond comprehension if that were to happen.
Well, I don't know if that's I'm as optimistic as you, Jim, but I would be happy to have him back, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's a cut above the others, there's no doubt. I think he's...
You know, I'm a little older than him, but you got to start thinking at some point, particularly in college athletics, which is there are no permanent things except for Bear Bryant and Joe Paterno and a few like that, which are very rare these days, is where you want to end up in your retirement years. And I'm not sure I would want to end up in Tuscaloosa. Nothing wrong with Tuscaloosa, but I think a town like Austin or even Baton Rouge would offer a lot more.
297-5633 is your number for Charlton Bath for Gotston Jr., the pride of Newellton, Louisiana, who resides in Hammond and has a website where he pontificates about politics, forgotston.com. And he started about the same time as a guy named John Copes began commenting on Louisiana politics on the Internet well over a decade ago. John Copes was taken from us far too early, but CB prevails and continues, and there will be much to talk about in the year to come. Before we dispense with LSU football, sort of, in the last game program that LSU printed, on the back page there's a photo of Bobby Jindal shaking Les Miles' hand for the one game he attended this year. And the caption reads, LSU's number one fan.
Oh, my God.
What do you make of that, CB?
I make that as PR, and it has more to do with the funding of LSU than it does with the truth. And that's just, you know, that's what I find really kind of sad. It's typical. We give people like politicians credit for doing things with really our money and giving it away, and they get all the credit. And I really think, you know, it's just a pet peeve of mine that having all these buildings with the names of the politicians at the time near the front of them, thanking them for doing this. And you know, if I was king for a day, I would pass a law that said the only people that could be put on those kind of plaques thanking them of the taxpayers of the state of Louisiana, because I think the politicians lose track of the site that it's really us that gives them the ability to give that money away, and that's not something they should take credit for. And I know maybe that's a petty thing, and we've been doing it forever, but it is part of what's wrong, and not just in Louisiana. It happens in the other states too, that we give the politicians credit for just taking our money and doing what they're supposed to with it, and in many cases, what they're not supposed to. But to take our money and give it to a, you know, to build a road and then go out and take credit for building the road, it's just ridiculous. I mean, that's why we pay taxes.
You got a good point. I don't think many people are disagreeing with you. Now, Governor Jindal has curtailed or cut funding to higher education. Some would say maybe that was a good thing, but nonetheless, the universities have had to raise tuition. They've had to make adjustments to try to keep the trains rolling, and some professors have left. Some programs have been dispensed with. So is Governor Jindal the guy who should be portrayed as, quote, LSU's number one fan?
Well, he may be the number one fan of the football team, which that was, and, you know, I think in context that's what that picture was about, but that's not even true, but certainly not a fan of higher education. And you mentioned, you know, it may have been a good thing or not a good thing to cut funding, and I tend to agree that if we had cut funding by reducing the number of colleges and reducing the number of programs where we had like one architecture school and one engineering school, and if you want to go to school for engineering, you know, you go to Louisiana Tech, or if you want to go maybe to petroleum engineering, you go to LSU, and consolidate these schools, it could have been a good thing. But what we've done is, and there's nobody that can say, other than we know all the schools are not funded properly, but the fact is what we failed to do and what Bobby Jindal failed to do, and he has, you know, such an opportunity to do it, was actually consolidate some schools and recognize that kids all have cars now or can get rides to school. It's not like in the olden days, you know, when you could not, you had to have a school nearby because you just couldn't travel to Baton Rouge from North Louisiana, you know, in the early 1900s or something like that. So you needed to build some local feeder schools, but we turned all those feeder schools, like the original Northeast or whatever the school was in Monroe, which was a junior college, which would be perfect if it had stayed as a junior college. And instead of, you know, having financial needs now, it would be a two-year college to send kids to LSU after, or maybe one of the other schools after, you know, 2 years of preparation. But instead of trying to duplicate and have a university, which is more to me of something about political patronage than it is about education for the students. So we probably could withstand, the colleges probably could withstand the $700 million that Bobby Jindal had cut if at the same time he had put his same will that he used in making the cuts behind reorganizing higher education. It was something I never could get Mike Foster to believe that Louisiana had more four-year higher education schools than Mississippi. He just refused to accept that, and you could count them for him, and he still wouldn't do it. And that just says something. Not that Mississippi is perfect, but you know, Florida has much fewer four-year schools, and if they want to have, you know, quality education, I think that the quality education ought to be focused, you know, mm-hmm. And if you have to have it geographically distributed, we can have, you know, one school in North Louisiana, one school in Central Louisiana, and one school in South Louisiana, and those be research universities, and everything else be reduced back to two-year colleges to feed into them.
C.B. Forgotston is the man we're talking with, Juris Doctor from LSU's Paul M. Abarrow Law Center. Your undergraduate degree is from LSU as well, isn't it?
That's correct.
So you've got two degrees from Louisiana State University, and C.B. is a man who, of course, admires his alma mater and is reacting defensively about Governor Jindal being proclaimed by the LSU game program before the Arkansas game as, quote, LSU's number one fan, Bobby Jindal. And remember, it was LSU that made Bobby Jindal a naturalized American citizen. His mother got a job when she was pregnant in India, came to LSU, and Bobby Jindal was born in Baton Rouge on June 10th, 1971. Will he be the president of the United States come 2016? Will he take the office on January 20th? 2017. We'll talk about it with CB in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Outside the area, it's 877-217-5757. Inkster Show at WRKF.org online, and Kevin Gallagher producing. And we shall go to the phone lines in just a bit with C.B. Forgotston, the well-known attorney, political pundit, state government watchdog. Forgotston.com is where you can read his material about the world at large, particularly our world in Louisiana. An outspoken fiscal conservative who believes that Governor Jindal may have been on the right track in cutting funding for higher education, but he did it the wrong way. He should have been cutting universities and programs at universities, and some would say that's impossible to do and stay alive and viable politically. But C.B. Forgotston, the governor's not running for office again in Louisiana anytime soon, it appears. And it also appears, no surprise, that he will be running for president of the United States in 2016. And come January 20th, 2017, will we have a Louisiana native, the pride of Baton Rouge, Bobby Jindal, taking the oath of office as the 45th American president? Will this happen? C.B. Forgotston.
Well, Jim, I'm not even sure if the sun's going to come up tomorrow, but I am absolutely positive Bobby Jindal will not be our next president. I mean, he truly had a great opportunity. All he had to do was turn around the state. And doing, you know, not politically favorable things like fixing higher ed and actually reducing the budget and maybe reducing taxes, because we don't need to spend money on all kinds of things. And a very small example is, remember, he came in and he was going to get rid of all these boards and commissions, and that sounded good. And even though it wasn't a lot of money, I think we spend $7 million on them annually, symbolic, it would mean a lot. And he made a lot of to-do about it, and several legislators introduced some bills to do that. But then when the dust settled after almost 6 years now, we actually, I believe, have one more board, and the expenditures have gone up from $5.5 million to a little over $7 million. And it would have been very easy for him to stop all these new boards and commissions. All he had to do was veto them in most cases, or just tell the legislators, we're not going to do that. And just symbolically, that would have looked good. He doesn't have a very good resume unless the public is very gullible to just listen to what he says and not do any research into what he did. But he had a grand opportunity, and he might well be positioned to be president next time. But that's not going to happen, and I don't know if it'll ever happen in the future. I mean, I think he's going to be one of these people that, because of the uniqueness of him being the first Indian American to be governor of a state, he'll probably always have a spot on the speaking circuit, and he will always be a draw and everything. And particularly as long as he tells people what his press releases say and doesn't encourage them to dig too deeply. That's the reason I think Bobby Jindal doesn't take questions at any of his PR stops, if you've noticed that, and I know you have. I mean, it makes you wonder right then, is it that he cannot think on his feet, which I think is partially, but you would think that a person who is so proud of their accomplishments would be able to answer a few questions about him. I mean, like, you know, Why is it we needed the Mike Foster Library on the third floor of the City Hall in Franklin when, you know, we got libraries crumbling down at colleges?
All right. Well, the governor has agreed to appear before the Baton Rouge Press Club. It'll be a special meeting of the Press Club on January 8th, 6 days away, a Wednesday. And presumably he will take questions like this one. That one might come up, and it'd be a good question for him to answer, and I'm sure he will be forthcoming. 297-5633 is your number. We'll go to the phones in just a moment with C.B. Forgotston. Philip writes that don't count Jindal out. What was Barack Obama's slogan? Yes, we can. Don't count Bobby out. Maybe that'll be the one for 2016. Philip notes that the governor will be 45 in 2016, and on June 10th, Philip is correct. The governor will turn 45 years of age, and he will be the 45th American president. So there's some some symbolism.
Look, there are people that still believe in the Easter Bunny too. So I'm not gonna criticize anybody for believing it. Heck, I don't have a crystal ball. I'm just telling you based on what I see. As far as I'll go a step further. I don't believe there's going to be a Republican president the next time. I just don't see it, unless something drastically changes.
Okay. CB says that Bobby Jindal has minimal chances of being elected president, but there are others who say Bobby's been counted out before, and look out. 2016 could be the year. 45 in... And he'll be the 45th American president. You heard it here first.
Well, that's meant to be.
CB for Godston and Randy and Zachary. Randy, you're on the air with CB.
Yes, I see what you're alluded to about these people that insist on having their names put on different things, politicians. And I'm more and more believe that they need to leave their egos at the door and go on about the people's business. Thanks.
Well, I wish they would, Randy. I wish the only thing they cared about was that they did the people's business and not be worried about who gets the credit and why and all that, and would be much better off. And that starts in Washington and goes all the way down to the police jury, to the village mayor.
297.
That would be my one wish for 2014, they would.
Okay, well, let's look back briefly at 2013. You were on the show a few times discussing the 5th District congressional race, and CB called it. I don't know that he picked Vance McAllister to win, but he picked Neil Reiser not to win, saying the Neil deal wouldn't sit well with voters, and apparently CB was right, although the endorsement from Mr. Phil Robertson probably helped Vance McAllister immensely. But it was not a close race. It was 60-40. Turnout was abysmal. People were not energized by either candidate, but certainly not by Mr. Reiser, who spent well over $1 million trying to win this seat that was pretty much, they cleared the decks for him. They got Rodney Alexander out of the way. They called a quick election. They were hoping he would be ensconced as the congressman, and boom, this guy Vance McAllister pops up and wins. How did it happen, CB?
Well, I think with all due respect to the Duck Dynasty folks, I really think it had more to do with the backlash, because I certainly don't believe the Democrats voted for Vance McAllister because of Phil Robertson and Willie Robertson's endorsement. I really don't. And I think they would tell you that, and I've talked to plenty of them. And by the way, I'm not a member of either of the parties. But that just set wrong with people, you know, this deal. And I think the backlash was there, and I still believe that Vance McAllister's got a lot of work to do to retain that seat. It's not his to keep. It wasn't a mandate for Vance McAllister, and I would tell him that if he asked me, but of course politicians don't ask me my opinion. But I would say, you got a lot of work to do to prove who Vance McAllister is. We knew who Bobby Jindal was. We knew who Timmy Teeple was. And we knew who Neil Reiser was, and we didn't like it. And we were just looking, and that, you know, when I was on your show, I just said, I don't know who's going to be it, I believe. But I knew that the public was looking for somebody other than Neil Reiser, just because they were mad at the way it was done.
Well, I think you may be onto something. The race was so lopsided that that whoever got in the runoff with Reiser might have won. But I'll say this: if Phil Robertson had been running, mm-hmm. he would have been the congressman.
Oh, I will not argue with that. I will not argue with that at all. But again, I think it, I'm not sure that Phil Robertson running in a traditional election, you know, with politicians, professional politicians having a long time, I think the rap on him is, you know, what does he know about government? You know, he's never been involved in it and stuff like that. But, you know, it's quite possible. I mean, you know, we've had well-known people. Jimmy Davis got elected because he was a singing cowboy. But he also served in public office.
297-5633 is your number, and we shall return to the phone lines with CB. I did want to read an email from Rick Causey. He writes, like a very bad haircut, forget about Jindal. He is ours until we grow out of him. Please, please, let's start encouraging General Russell Honoré as our next governor. He's truly a man of the people, just what the state needs. As we look ahead to 2015, as in next year, looks like the candidates who are running will be David Vitter, Jay Darden, and John Bell Edwards. What if Russell Honoré got in the mix?
Well, I think that would definitely hurt the Democratic candidate. I don't know how well he would do. I think he's very popular, and he's saying all the right things. But, you know, it's different. Once you get to be a candidate and people start picking through and they start raising questions, frankly, other than Dwight Eisenhower, I don't think we've had very much luck with electing military leaders to political office. For the simple fact is, if you don't obey a military officer, they put you in jail or shoot you. And so you don't have a temperament for building coalitions. And General Honoré may be different, but that's what it, there's a big difference between being a particularly very high-ranking military officers, and not many of them, and I admire him for his service, but it doesn't necessarily translate into politics and building the coalitions that are necessary. I mean, you just find out that legislators have a mind of their own.
Jonathan on Bayou Manchac. Jonathan, you're on with C.B. for Godston. Good morning.
Good morning. C.B., this is Jonathan Harris. We were in school together and crossed paths many times.
What's on your mind, Jonathan?
I just want to tell C.B., thanks for staying at it all these years. Some of this commentary and interest, you know, investigation and listening to what's going on in the political scene can be very discouraging, and I'm glad he didn't go on and do more fun things. I've enjoyed listening to his comments over the years, and glad that I knew him when he was active at the legislative level.
All right, thank you, Jonathan.
Yeah, thank you, John. You made my day. I appreciate
that. Yeah, well,
and CB, I wish I'd done other things and made some money.
Well, I was just going to ask you. You're doing this for the most part pro bono.
Not most part, all part.
Well, how do you make a living, CB? You practice law?
Yeah, not really. Not in the traditional sense that most people would think. I have people that actually pay me to consult with me. I learned a lot working for the legislature. I learned the process. And it's interesting that so few people that had worked in the legislature along with me and since then didn't realize that was a very valuable thing to know, and particularly with term limits now, without the legislators having that institutional knowledge, it's been a very valuable thing, and some people actually pay me from time to time to just consult with them. I don't lobby or anything like that, but just to explain the process and come up with, you know, strategy for accomplishing things, particularly in the legislative process.
297-5633 for CB for Godston. Tom Aswell of Louisiana Voice in Denham Springs. Good morning, Tom. Happy New Year.
Good morning. Good morning, CB.
Good morning, Tom. Good to hear from you.
Well, good to talk to you, finally. Excuse me. I think Jindal at one time had a very solid proposal. When you were talking about the colleges, when he proposed merging Southern New Orleans with the University of New Orleans, I thought that was a very good thing, but somehow he didn't have the follow-through on it to get it accomplished.
Well, I don't think he has a follow-through on much of anything, but also you can't just take one little situation like that and merge a couple of colleges. I think you have to have a bigger picture for looking at reforming the whole college system. And I know that's easy to say, but that's what it really takes.
Well, the governor has been proclaimed by the people who put out the LSU program as LSU's number one fan. We emailed him a few weeks ago through his spokesperson, Kyle Plotkin, and asked how many games Governor Jindal actually attended this year at LSU. And as far as we know, it's the only one. There was no response, by the way, none from Mr. Plotkin from the email. You know, John McKithen used to go to every game, home and away, go to practice. Some might say that was a bit overboard. But this governor, let's face it, he doesn't have the same emotional pull to our university, CB, as John McKithen did or Huey Long did or many other governors, including Mike Foster.
No, and it's actually shown up. You know, I remember John McKithen very well going to LSU games. That was before they had all the prize suites and things like that. I remember running into John McKithen in the hallway, you know, both on the way to the men's room. That's how vivid I remember him. And I just think that maybe it is the loyalty to the school that makes a difference, but LSU has never suffered. Going back to Huey Long, which really made the school, my father was at LSU at the time of Huey Long, and he recalls being in the field house, and Huey would actually come in the afternoons and get behind the soda fountain and dip ice cream and hand out free ice cream cones to all the students. And that's just, you know, and the school benefited from being Huey's pet. I mean, a lot of people didn't like him running it the way he did necessarily, and a lot of people at LSU went to jail. But you can't say the school didn't grow during his tenure. And, you know, Bobby Jindal rules LSU with an iron hand, but we're not seeing any progress from it. And, you know, he's the first, I guess. Well, Buddy Romer did not go to LSU.
And neither did Governor Blanco.
Yeah.
But
it didn't do anything to hurt LSU.
Neither did David Treen.
Yeah. And so because LSU was so sacred, if there's nothing else, because of the football team, I just don't understand Bobby Jindal's attitude. I can understand if he doesn't like to go to football games and things like that, but I think the real proof of his dislike for LSU is just slashing across the board and not saying, well, we need to have a flagship university. That's only in rhetoric.
Caller asks, how many times has Governor Jindal been to a baseball or basketball game at LSU? And I would imagine the answer is none, but I don't know. But we encourage him or Mr. Plotkin to respond. We'll be back with CB for Gadsden in 90 seconds. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. CB for Gadsden with us, and we're pleased to spend the full hour with him. Happy New Year to CB and to all of you, and thank you for listening to WRKF as many days of the year as you can. 877-217-5757 outside the area. Inkstershow at WRKF.org if you're responding online. And
I hope you're keeping a list of all these questions to ask Governor Jindal at the press club lunch. Here would be a good question. I like asking hypothetical questions. His kids aren't old enough now, but they go to the LSU lab school. And I would ask him, if your kids or one of your children was graduating from high school at U High this May, what public college in Louisiana would you send them to?
That's a good question. Very good question.
I mean, because Bobby Jindal is responsible. He can, you know, he can't blame this on Blanco or somebody else. And so my question is if you think you had been doing right by the school, why, if you won't send them to one of the colleges, where, why won't you?
Well, and a few listeners, I'm weaving through some emails right now. Listeners have pointed out that Jindal was head of the higher education system in Louisiana for a few years, the Louisiana system, which includes Grambling and Louisiana Tech and several other schools in the state, most of the state four-year schools. And another listener notes that Governor Jindal's children have a police escort to the lab school every morning, and I live in that area, so I think that is correct. And why do they need that? Is that really teaching the Jindal kids about real life?
The state police, their standard argument for that is, well, we are required by law to provide security for the governor and his family, and that's why they justify sending troopers with him on political speaking events. And so that's not a good answer, but that's the rationalization from the Louisiana State Police, and Bobby Jindal just remains silent. No, I think that they could. Bobby Jindal's very busy. I think that some government staffer could possibly drive them to school, but I would think they would get a lot more from being driven by one of their parents to school. I just think that's part of growing up in life, or catching the bus.
There's always a possibility that something can happen to any of us, but I think the odds are really low that somebody's going to do harm to one of the governor's children at school. And it's just like these LSU football coaches and coaches around the country now who have all this police protection when they're coming off the field with 100 well-conditioned athletes around them.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Jim. I'm watching football all day. That really starting to get to me. I'm wondering, you know, we're short of state troopers. We hear that. We're starting up a new school and everything. I think that's just it's a status symbol.
Oh, and Bear Bryant started.
And if not, why instead of, you don't need somebody with a gun. I don't know of, there may have been any football coaches that have been attacked by any wild and crazies, particularly with an average of 250-pound men, 100 men standing around them on their team. But, you know, if they have to have a bodyguard, they surely make enough money, at least the coach at LSU, to hire some ex-linebacker at LSU, give him a good job, and let him follow him around.
There you go. Michael Bonnet, who's the sports information director, is around the coach. He looks like he works out. I think he could take care of business if somebody attacked Coach Miles.
Yeah, I just it's. And I watch the looks on these faces of these bodyguards and everything, and some of them are kind of smiling, and they're trying to stand there and look like Secret Service agents without cracking a smile, even when the team wins and all that. it just seems like a real waste of manpower. When you think about it, with what, 100 and something Division I schools and football teams and three state troopers from each one, there's got to be something they can do besides that. I mean, they could hire some ex-football player some private security training, and I suspect some of them already do that, and let them do it. And they can just wear purple and gold. They don't need to have a state police uniform on.
I'm with you, and Bear Bryant started that nonsense, and then every coach wanted to be like Bear Bryant. I can understand how they wanted to be like him in winning football games, but
yeah,
they thought by having a state trooper that might help, and it's preposterous. Absolutely preposterous.
And they went from one to now at least two. I see around Coach Miles, I mean, there's I believe, two state troopers now, and there's a Baton Rouge policeman and I believe an LSU policeman and everything. And I just think that those people, given the traffic conditions after LSU football games,
well, you're right.
Those people would be better off out there trying to direct people off the campus.
You're right on target. Now, I didn't want the hour to get away without talking about the U.S. Senate race this year. As in 10 months from now, we will be electing a U.S. senator, either reelecting Mary Landrieu or bringing in Bill Cassidy or Rob Baynes or somebody else, Paul Hollis maybe. The field is getting more crowded. Does that mean anything, CB?
It depends. It could be helpful to Mary Landrieu if more Republicans get in if they start attacking Cassidy. And that's the real question, because they can do a job while she kind of stays above the fray. And I'm wondering about what the rationale is for these people, particularly like Paul Hollis. I don't know him at all. I knew his father. He was a longtime state senator and everything. But I just don't understand why you wake up one day and say, I want to be a U.S. senator, even though you have won in a legislative district. And I keep wondering if this isn't some sort of effort, maybe by the Landrieu administration, but it's very capable, very likely by the Republicans to get in there and shoot at, not literally, but to take pot shots at Cassidy, who's clearly the Republican front runner, to declare him not to be conservative enough. And that was the first thing that Hollis said. Now, if you are truly a Republican and a team player, you ought to get in there to me, and your first shot should be Mary Landrieu's not conservative enough. But the first shot out of the box is, well, I think the public deserves somebody more conservative than Cassidy. And I don't even know what conservative means. I'm a fiscal conservative, and that's about all I'm really conservative on. And I don't have many candidates to pick from when it comes to fiscal conservative. So I don't know what Paul Hollis is talking about. But if all he's going to do is get in there and go after Cassidy, then it's not going to make any difference. I think when it comes down to the best, it doesn't make any difference how many Republicans get in the race. Mary Landrieu has to get 50% plus one in the primary to get elected. In the primary. If it goes into a runoff, as you well know, any longtime incumbent or any incumbent that gets in a runoff has an uphill battle.
Right now,
that means more people have voted for somebody else.
Now, she has won two runoffs. First time she was, of course, running as a private citizen after losing the governor's election in 95. She beat Woody Jenkins by 5,788 votes. And then six years later, her next term, she beat Susie Terrell in a runoff. So she's done this before, but there are those, like Bernie Pinsonet, for example, who believe that Landrieu is highly beatable and that she will probably lose. Now, I'm not sure that Bernie's right, but he speaks with some authority on this. What are the chances of Landrieu being the only Democrat to hold on once again, CB?
I've gone 360 degrees on this, so before everybody calls in and said you said just the opposite, I'll admit it. Things change, and things will change between now and November. But I want to point out one thing. I don't believe we've ever had a December runoff for the U.S. Senate.
I think we did with Terrell. I think was a December runoff.
All right, then I stand corrected. But this Obama rollout has been much worse than anybody thought. Jim, I truly believed that if you have a plan, your health care plan, and you like it, you can keep it. That just made common sense to me, and I didn't read 2,000 pages. I didn't read 10 pages in that bill, except to look up a couple of things that people had pointed out to me. And that was just startling to me. And that has had huge repercussions and turned things around. And that, in addition to the sign-up problems on the website, which is, I don't think is as big as the if you like your plan, you can keep it when it comes to reelection. I think Mary is now in trouble. And I think that the more people learn about Obamacare and the fact that it doesn't do what they want, as people, It's one of those things that I start thinking about where it gets me in trouble. I start talking about what's going to happen if the legislature doesn't do this and doesn't do that, and, you know, nobody pays any attention. And then when it happens, everybody gets upset. And that's just human nature. And so I think that the more Obamacare rolls out, the more people are going to find problems. They're going to particularly find pricing problems.
All right, hold tight, CB. We're going to try to get a few folks in our remaining time with CB for Godston, 297-5633. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with CB. Hi, Dan.
Hi. Would one of the reasons for this bodyguard situation be that that's just a good way for a state trooper to get ahead? I mean, Colonel Mike Edmondson was a chauffeur/bodyguard for the LSU football team.
He was for like nine coaches. You're correct. And, of course, Mike Edmondson did a fine job. Nobody attacked any of those nine coaches during his tenure. And he looked like he came out of Central Casting, and he ended up becoming commander of state police. And I think he's done an excellent job in that capacity. One of Governor Jindal's best hires has been Mike Edmondson, who may be running for lieutenant governor. So Dan may be onto something. Maybe the way to achieving great things in Louisiana politics is to begin as a trooper guarding the LSU football coach.
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt your reputation to be widely known. But frankly, I think that the traditional path to higher rankings and better things is to be the governor's personal bodyguard. That's the ones that usually get rewarded. Mike Foster rewarded his bodyguard very handsomely, got him a promotion and then a new job. And so
didn't Edwin Edwards' bodyguard go to jail, though?
I'm trying to think.
One of them. I think he was convicted along with the governor.
Yeah. But traditionally, the governor's bodyguards are the ones that usually get the big promotions and things like that. Mike Edmondson is kind of a aberration, and I think you're right. I mean, he's right out of Central Casting, although I have the same concerns about him standing there when Bobby Jindal is running off about how many water bottles they gave out, just saying, you know, surely, and I think that there's something else he could be doing. Maybe he could go out and give out water bottles or something better than just standing back there and looking official. I don't understand all this window dressing.
With his beautiful uniform, he looks good in those dress blues, by the way.
He does. And the gun. If you were doing a movie about the Louisiana State Police, he would be one of your stars for sure.
And he became a very close friend of Nick Saban. He doesn't talk a whole lot about that, but he's one of the few people who can pick up the phone and call Nick Saban, and Saban's going to get on the line and talk with Mike Edmondson. Mike kick me for saying this, but he still exchanges Christmas presents with Brother Nick and is probably down in New Orleans right now wishing him well against the University of Oklahoma tonight.
Yeah, well, I know they're down there guarding him, the state police are. Maybe you could send Mike a note and ask him if he knows what Nick Saban's going to be doing tomorrow morning.
Well, I love Mike Edmondson. I think he's done a good job, but whether he'll be lieutenant governor, that's a stretch. It's kind of like what we're talking about. Movie stars and singers and athletes, sometimes when they get in the political realm, they find out it's a little different than it was in their other line of work. And of course, we've had some notable exceptions like Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Davis, but we've talked about the governor's race in 2015. Looks like it's going to be a crowded field for a lieutenant governor with Mike Edmondson and Elbert Guillory and Kip Holden and Billy Nungesser. That one will be a fun race too, CB.
Oh, I think it's going to be very interesting, and my question is, why does anybody want to be lieutenant governor? And, you know, and this, you mentioned the transition from your job into politics. I mean, when you're carrying a gun and a badge and a eagle on your shoulder, people are very nice to you. And it makes you wonder whether it's the eagle and the gun and the power you possess and whether those same people would think highly of you if you no longer had that and you just wanted to be lieutenant governor.
Well, CB, we thank you. Happy New Year. And hopefully this is the first of many times we'll talk with you throughout the year. Take care, my friend.
Thanks, Dan.
Bye-bye. And today, I think, is the last day producing this show for Kevin Gallagher, who's been with us off and on for 8 years. And moving on, he'll be on the air on another station. But we wish Kevin well, and nobody's done it better than Mr. Kevin Gallagher. Good luck, Kevin.
Thank you very much. I think under the circumstances, I won't plug the radio station. Okay?
Don't think that would be a good idea.
It would be in bad taste.
But Kevin's a big talent, and I'm sure he'll do good things wherever he emerges in the days, months, years to come. Thank you, Kevin, once again. Thank you for listening, Jim. Everybody, and we'll be back tomorrow. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.